We're back with a special edition of Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm Randall White. We'll finish this hour with a look back on the legacy of Sacramento's most important jurist, Justice Anthony Kennedy. He served as an associate justice on the U.S. Supreme Court for more than 30 years, from February 1988 to July 2018. He wrote several majority opinions that redefined civil rights for all LGBTQ Americans. In 2015, Justice Kennedy authored the majority ruling in Obergefell against Hodges, which granted marriage equality to same-sex couples in all 50 states. Just a few days after that decision was announced, Leslie McClure spoke with law professors Larry Levine and John Sims. They both got to know Justice Kennedy when he was on the faculty at the McGeorge School of Law.
I have seen Justice Kennedy work, especially in our summer program at Salzburg, where he's taught for many years. So he taught constitutional law at McGeorge for 23 years before he went on the Supreme Court. Then once he moved to D.C., it wasn't feasible for him to teach in Sacramento. So then he really started teaching in Salzburg. So I've been there a couple times when he's been teaching there, and I've seen him at work. He's an incredibly conscientious person. So there are some people that, you know, like to talk a good game. They have all kinds of opinions, and they're just not willing to really bear down and do the work that's necessary. That's not his style at all. He is just an incredibly conscientious, thoughtful person. And he's willing to follow the logic of the prior cases where it leads him. One of the reasons that I think Larry and I would agree that the result reached in Obergefell was not surprising was Justice Kennedy's prior decisions, going back to the most important decision in 1996 in Romer against Evans, when it's the first time that the Supreme Court really engaged a law that discriminated against gays and lesbians and invalidated it. That was really the bedrock for everything that came later.
Is he the same person on and off the bench, Professor Levine?
I think that would be a fair assessment in that he is cautious and I think generally conservative by nature and in person, somewhat reserved. I also would add to John's point that I think he's also been very consistent, much more consistent than a lot of his colleagues in his points of view, even when I've disagreed with him, which there are many occasions where I have disagreed with the results in some of the cases. I think he is animated by an equality principle. And he, on First Amendment cases, I think he may be the closest thing to a First Amendment purist on the court. So he has a certain, I think he's got a real consistency as a jurist. And I agree with John that he's very thoughtful and deliberate about pretty much everything he does.
Given that description, thoughtful and deliberate and conscientious, it surprises me then, many critics have said that his opinions are sort of broad and sweeping and don't offer really precise enough language for legal doctrine. Is that then a fair criticism, Professor Sims?
Oh, no. Those people don't know what they're talking about, really. No, I'd say exactly the opposite, which is that many justices indulge themselves or and say whatever they feel like, or they hide behind legal technicalities and
big words.
Yeah, and they kind of wash their hands of the results that are flowing from their decisions by pretending that they don't involve real people. And I think what is true about all of Justice Kennedy's decisions for the court in these four important gay rights cases is that he actually talks about real life and about real people. My view would be that starting with Romer and going all the way through the other cases, he has really penetrated to the reality of life, which is that relationships are important to us, that we're all looking for love. We sometimes find it, we sometimes don't. And that to deny that aspect of life to any group within the population is fundamentally unfair. And he gets to that, and the other opinions don't get to that.
But once you have five votes, that is the constitutional law. And somehow that was a recent revelation to me. I should be embarrassed that that was a revelation. But I realize, you know, that is the new constitutional law, I would think. And it's something you teach, John, but due process is different now than it would have been a decade ago because of Justice Kennedy.
It sounds almost more human.
While he's more forthright in describing what is going on, that the basic approach that he takes is totally consistent with our past constitutional law. That is, you know, at one point, racial discrimination, even slavery, was perfectly okay. That was how it was done. That was normal. At another point, the subordination of women was just taken for granted. Of course, women can't think for themselves, or it's a big waste to send them to higher education or to, you know, give them any decent jobs. And that came to be seen to be wrong, that it denied the humanity of a group within the population. And his willingness to not hide behind the convenient pre-existing categories to be, I find it refreshing. Mm-hmm. But I know that those who disagree with the outcome and who reject the fundamental idea of equality that he embraces, they find this really threatening and abhorrent.
How far along the path, then, are we towards full equality?
Brown was decided in the 1950s, and we could ask ourselves how we're doing on racial equality. Mm-hmm. And the answer is not a happy one in many ways. And so I assume that we're going to have many skirmishes ahead. There's going to be huge battles over so-called religious liberty and the right of people to discriminate. So in many ways, the battle's just beginning on that front. But there's a lot ahead that will keep civil rights lawyers employed.
Professor Sims, just final question. How does this all fit into Justice Kennedy's legacy?
I think undoubtedly, starting with Romer through the marriage equality decision, mark him as the person, I think, who's done more than any other single person to promote equality for the LGBT community than anyone else in history. He has written every one of those, and what started out as being astounding and revolutionary is now taken as obvious. And so even the marriage equality decision from the Supreme Court, while there are those that don't like it, it was seen to be inevitable. And the reaction, I think, has been very muted. And in a way, it probably makes the path smoother. And as Larry says, I mean, there are a lot of other equality issues to be addressed. But the fact that this important social institution is open to everybody and that all families are going to be recognized is a huge step forward. And I think that then facilitates the political organizing and the legislative work and the judicial challenges that are necessary to bring about other aspects of equality. But, you know, that first step of recognizing that the law treats everybody equally shouldn't be underestimated.
Well, thank you both for taking this walk with me through history. I appreciate your time.
It was fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this special edition of Insight on the past, present, and future of LGBTQ rights. I'm Randall White. This program was produced by Cody Drabble. Special thanks to Ben Adler, Leslie McClurg, Beth Ruyak, Rick Cushman, Steve Milne, Kate Gonzalez, Chris Remington, James Morrison, Bert Johnson, and Jen Picard. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Casey Gardner, and Emily Zentner. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Senior producer is Helen Barrington. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. As always, thank you for joining us.